welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Okay, we're recording. Hello, welcome to episode 376 of the Self-Help Podcast. With me, Ed Lamb, and my good pal Sean Orford. How are you, Sean?
I'm fine, I'm groovy, I am good.
It's been a while since we spoke, actually. We're recording from afar, aren't we? How are you? How's Trick? Like you?
Life's okay. It's busy as usual. I've started going back into factories in very kind of socially distant ways, and that's quite extraordinary because it's quite weird for me now, having spent months in the house, to kind of get out and do stuff. But certainly very weird talking with people who are having quite a tough time, really, out there. You know, a lot of the factory guys have kept going, and they've had to deal with the fact that their other half, their significant other, and the kids are at home. You know, so they're the one that's going out and trying to deal with all that. I mean, it's a tale for each family about how they've survived all this or are surviving it.
I know, it's weird, isn't it? Oh, well, just everyone's got their own little story of, I mean, I was just thinking, it's been nearly 5 months, I think, since things really kicked off in the UK. Which, I don't know, time's flown by for me. I can't believe it's been 5 months because, you know, I was on a train down to Swansea for a Six Nations rugby game, which was cancelled on the way down, which I was sort of hoping it would be because I felt a bit guilty, you know, about having going to this big, huge, you know, thing with the virus going around, and thankfully it was cancelled, and we had a nice little weekend away anyway, a quiet weekend with family.
Yeah,
5 months. Yeah, it's. I don't know. Is it flown by for you, or is it just me?
I've got two views of it. One is yes, it looks like it was only yesterday, but the other one is it has been like quite a hard slog sometimes when I've been doing like 12-hour days online sometimes. You know, and the amount of focus you have to have online that you don't have if you're with somebody is so different. You know, and everybody that I'm working with is also working online from home. You know, so a lot of tough stuff going on there, really.
Yeah, I know. I'm up in Northumberland at the moment. We're in a little holiday cottage, so making the most of these summer holidays. The kids are off school still. I've been for 5 months or whatever it is. But yeah, schools are back in a couple of weeks. So it's gonna be strange. Yeah, going back into that.
And how are you feeling about that in terms of the kids going back into that environment? Do you feel kind of safe and secure in it? Are you?
I do, yeah. Obviously in terms of health of the kids, there's very little risk of them having any kind of illness. Obviously there is the worry that the virus will start to circulate more. It seems quite likely, to be honest. Yes. But then you've got to weigh it up. You've got to weigh the risk of that up against the risk of kids not learning anything and not interacting with pals and not kind of taking part in the world anymore. So
yeah,
I don't know. Well, we're talking about responsibility today, aren't we? So, yeah, no, I take responsibility for sending them back to school. I know there are parents thinking about that really don't want kids to go back to school and might not. It'll be interesting to see how many put the foot down and don't send their kids in. But, yeah, I take responsibility for sending them in, and I think, fingers crossed, it'll be all right, eh?
Across Europe the infection rate is picking up again.
I know, it just seems, I mean, we'll move on in a sec, but October, November, you know, and this is the time when the flu tends to pick up anyway in our part of the world, and it's question marks about whether the cold weather, as it cools down again, will be put bad for the virus. So I don't know. I mean, we're so lucky, mate. Our setup, my wife's a teacher. My work's carried on quite nicely. I'm just, sitting on the sidelines watching the river go by. I feel a bit helpless in some ways, and There are a lot of people struggling.
If you think about, we're talking about responsibility today, and if you look at all the people that are out there, I keep going to places where people are supposed to be wearing masks and they're not. And I get the whole kind of debate about, are masks useful, are they not useful? But are people taking responsibility for their part in this virus and in maintaining it, spreading it, you know, getting rid of it? And it feeds very much into what we're looking at tonight about, or today, about responsibility.
About collective and individual responsibility. So, yeah, how come this was your idea? How come you wanted to talk about responsibility today, Sean?
Well, the first thing that kicked me off was talking to some young people that were feeling really, really that their exam results had been calculated. And some of them had done very well out of it, but they were still kind of angry because their friends hadn't. And just the unfairness of it as it was seen. And the idea of who takes responsibility for that, you know, is it this the fault of the virus? Is it no one's fault? Is it the fault of the algorithm? Who designed the algorithm? Is it, you know, that kind of idea? And it seems so often politicians generally are quite slippery creatures. I mean, they're good at it. And they're good at not answering questions and not taking responsibility for things. And it just got me thinking right across the board about people not being prepared to wear masks, about, you know, the whole exam issue. But then I started digging in deeper and just thinking about what's going on. And I see loads of people professionally who don't take responsibility for themselves. It's always someone else's fault. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm like this because it's the way my mother put my hat on or my father dropped me on my head or whatever it was, rather than being responsible for who they are. And some people avoid responsibility at all costs. It's quite crazy when you look at it. You know?
Yeah, well, in the kind of legal world, it's kind of constantly looking for loopholes. And I mean, I don't know if you just mentioned it, but in your blog post today, it was, you mentioned the US female diplomat that did a runner from the UK after, did she kill that young lad on his motorbike?
Well, she allegedly, you can't say she did because she's never been tried, but she allegedly killed a young man who was on a motorbike, I think, and she hit him with the car. I think she was driving on the wrong side of the road because she automatically went to her side of the road. Rather than staying and facing up to what has happened, which to me is the responsibility issue, she claimed diplomatic immunity and legged it back to the States, whereupon the officials there have kind of hunkered down around her and said, you know, you can't have her back. Yeah, so
I think we might have done something, a similar podcast to this, like in the last few months, 6 months, who knows? Anyway, because I seem to recall linking to the same article that I'm going to link to in our show notes, because there's an article from a couple of years ago that talks about the number of hit and runs in the UK on our roads.
Yeah.
And I won't go on too much about it because that's my area of obsession. But in 2018, there were almost 30,000 registered recorded hit and runs in incidents on the road. I'm not going to use that word accidents because we don't have accidents on the road. But do we have this kind of inbuilt instinct to run away from responsibility when something like that happens, that, you know, when we've caused...
I get a bit kind of speechless as to how, as a human being, you could hit another person and not stop and check that they were right and do what you can to kind of save their life or to help them. The idea that you run away and you leave that person maybe to die. You know, I don't understand. I see it all around me, but emotionally, I don't get it. Why would you do that? And yes, it's self-preservation, and maybe the person didn't have a license, they didn't have insurance, or maybe they were stoned, or maybe they were pissed, or whatever it was. But it's self-protection. So I'm prepared to let you die than face the consequences of my own actions. And that to me is like outrageous. But there you go. That's life.
I know. Well, me too. And I've been hit by a driver. Amazingly got away with it with, you know, just a sore elbow, but I was sideswiped by a a driver of a van.
I remember, didn't you video that?
Yeah. It's early on in early on in my recording of my ride's history, and thankfully got home and I was more like just thinking, was my camera recording? Did it get it? And it did. But yeah, so the police approached the guy and he said he didn't remember a cyclist even being there. And, you know, you see the footage and you can't imagine how he wouldn't, unless he was either, you know, maybe he was checking his phone or something like that. And there were no windows in the back of the van. It was just front windows only. And I was so close that I knocked his left wing mirror in. So he won't have been able to see me actually. But the van did brake for a while, like as if to say, oh, blimey, I've done something. And then it's only like a second or two after the brake lights go off and he zooms away. So obviously there's something going on in the mind of that driver, thinking, I've done something wrong. You have a split second to decide what to do. Do I stop? Do I see what I've just hit? Or do I go? And in that split second, the driver decided to do a legger and go off. Unlucky for him, you know, I was camera'd up. But even then, you know, the ramifications were tiny, really. You know, he got a couple £100 fine and that kind of thing. So it was nothing. But yeah, what happens in that 2 seconds to someone when they've done something daft and they decide not to face up, they run away from their problems?
But it's the issue of a reaction rather than a response. You know, like a mindfulness action is to respond and to consider, whereas a mindless reaction is to just react and get out of it. But it is that sense of like, I, me, my, and sod everybody else. And in a sense, to me, that's the problem that we face as a race of beings, and right across the globe. And the fact that we don't take responsibility for our actions, least of all plastics, which is, you're into bikes, I'm into plastics at the moment. Yep. So I'm trying to eliminate plastics from my life. So I've gone on to shaving with one of these, which is what used to happen 100 years ago. So it's just razor blades. There's no plastic. And you get the triple set of blades in a plastic thing. And yeah. I keep thinking those plastic things are going to be around for hundreds of years. And we must be using millions of them every day. And it's like we don't take any responsibility for what we do.
I know.
So I'm trying to place everything. So if I get a cup of coffee when I'm out, it goes in my stainless steel thing. I don't use the cartons from the coffee shop, you know.
Yep.
So I've now got blocks of body soap, blocks of hair soap, blocks of hair conditioner, and even blocks of toothpaste. And I'm using bamboo toothbrushes that have got a little bit of plastic bristle on.
Can you get like a stick that some people use? I've seen people are really into the plastic thing, and they can't even do the bamboo toothbrushes because the bristles. Isn't there some kind of weird stick you can get that like brush with?
Yeah, I've seen people when I've travelled that use turmeric to clean their teeth, and they use a stick to do it with. And you think it'll make your teeth go yellow, but it doesn't. It's weird. The teeth glow kind of very whitish.
Yeah, that's cool. And I mean, I'm Mr. Eco. Well, I'm trying to be, but yeah, there's loads of areas of where I don't take responsibility for, you know, negative impacts of my existence and my family, you know, and that, yeah, it might be, I still do use a car to get around. You know, I'm pretty good at making sure it's the absolute, like the last resort. But I still have a car and I still use it. But yeah, it's hard, I guess, for things like that, where we know we should be doing better, but we still take the easy option.
I mean, the family here, extended wise, you know, we will do a takeaway sometimes, comes from the internet, it comes in the plastic boxes. Now, I demand that all the plastic boxes are kept and washed and reused.
Yeah.
If we're going to do that and we're going to have those plastic things that are going to be around for hundreds of years, we don't throw them in the bin, even if they are supposed to be recycled and aren't. We actually use them as containers to hold things, you know. Or if I cook food and I share it, I will put them in those containers and I say to everybody, let me have the container back when you're finished.
Yeah.
So it doesn't get thrown away.
I can tell you, you're charged about this stuff, man. We need to set up another Sean's plastic podcast or something like that.
So wherever you look, and when you come back to the issues of responsibility, how irresponsible are we? I mean, I've used biros my whole life without even thinking about using a biro. And I've now gone back to, I use pencils. Yeah, it's wood. Yeah, and when there's a stub at the end, I can use it as a fire lighter. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, why have I been using those biros all the time?
Cheap. You know?
And Mr. Bic must have made millions out of his invention. Glad he did. Good lad. But how many throwaway biros? There must be millions, billions of the things, you know, in landfills. I'm outraged.
I know you should be. But how do we, the people then aren't taking responsibility, like me that's still using a biro? Or let's say that, Prince Andrew then, who's, you know, he's hiding away over here, you know, desperate not to be interrogated by the FBI or whatever. How do we convince someone like that, or someone that's done something wrong and not owned up to it, to be responsible? And what are the benefits and the positives to taking responsibility for your actions?
I can remember one of my teachers saying to me that when you're honest, you're not in any state of stress, because there's nowhere to run, there's nowhere to hide. You are where you are. Yeah. So I think that's one factor, is that at an individual level, it's less stressful to be honest than it is to be dishonest, is number one. Number two is that for somebody in our society in the position of royalty, whether you agree with it or not, is influential. So people then say, well, if he could get away with it, why should I worry about it? So we had the whole thing with Dominic Cummings, who is prepared to go against the rules that he was involved in creating, and then come up with all kinds of excuses that could justify what to me was his dishonesty in what he did.
Yeah.
You know, and he took no responsibility for that. He would palm it off on anybody. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that unless we as a race of people start to take responsibility for ourselves and for the world, then we're doomed.
Yeah.
You know, it's goodbye, Mr. Chips. You know, we're off.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's serious. And on the big, larger scale, it's serious ramifications for civilization, isn't it? When you kind of, when all these kind of different ways of doing things and this, a certain level of honesty or lack of honesty kind of becomes the standard in civilization, then it's over, isn't it, really? Or it might as well be.
Yeah. But it, in that sense, it is going to be over for an amount of people, whether it's everybody. If we keep doing what we're doing, then the world will grind to a halt. I mean, they were talking about in the Middle East, that in Doha, where the hottest I've ever known, there was 55 in the middle of the day. And they are now saying that it could go to 70 in the next kind of 10, 15 years.
70
years, it will be up to 70 degrees in the middle of the summer. And what's going to be able to live in that? I mean, there may be some plants that can adapt. I guess there could be even some animals that can adapt, but I don't think human beings could, unless we have more and more air conditioning systems that use up more and more fossil fuels, that, you know, it kind of it compounds, you know?
Wow. You got to send me something. Have you read something about it getting to 70? I've never seen anything mentioned about going that high. That's like, I mean, large parts of planet Earth are going to be uninhabitable, aren't they? It won't even be worth trying to live there. Crazy. I mean, to be honest,
that means that as it gets hotter at the equator, that people are going to have to move north and south. They're going to have to survive, to eat, you know, get water, whatever. And that means that we think we've got problems now with people coming across the channel in rubber dinghies. You know, when people are coming en masse and moving further up and down the globe, you know, it's going to be a big deal. Does that mean we're going to have water wars and food wars? You know, if we don't learn to look after each other, you know, we're really in a mess.
Yeah, you know? That's what it all about. So, yeah, this kind of tiny little topic here, we're talking about responsibility and about a person not owning up to something can bubble up and can infect all areas of life, can't it? And who knows, yeah. We might lead us. Flipping heck.
Yeah.
I'm thinking.
Have you ever heard of the Peter Principle?
Oh, I have, but remind me.
The Peter Principle is that he was a guy who did research on the civil service. And the Peter Principle is that if you're good at something, you get promoted. If you're good at that, you get promoted. If you're good at that, you get promoted. Until you get to the point where you're not really that good at your job and then you don't get any more promotion, which is where people in government are pretty much. Most of them are promoted beyond their ability. Yeah. But the way that you overcome the fact that you can't do your job is that you lie. And you bully the people underneath you to make up for your shortfall, right. You know, which to me is a huge kind of dishonesty that's going on right in our faces at a very high level. And then we wonder why younger people learn to kind of just, well, I mean, I must have now, you know, forget everybody else, because that's what they see around them, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating. You've seen a lot in kind of management circles over the years. You're not in the NHS anymore, are you? So you might be able to open up a bit more about. it's not just public health or public sector roles, but you've seen a lot of, I take it, high level, inverted commas, managers that like refuse to take responsibility a lot of the time.
The biggest problem is that in the public sector in this country, and I think the public sector is a fabulous idea, that you have to train the people properly. And what happens is, if someone is good at being a doctor or a psychologist or a nurse, we promote them into being a manager, but we don't give them any skills to do it. And we assume that because they're a good nurse, they're going to be a good nurse manager, and they're not. You know, and it's the whole issue. I remember being in one trust. And there was a woman who came in to help them try and save money and discovered the first week that she was there that every department was ordering different rubber gloves from different providers. So they were paying top dollar. And within the first week of being there, she did a deal that saved them something like £200,000 a year by getting one order from one supplier for the whole of the hospital rather than lots of different orders going out. I mean, that kind of thing. It's like, why on earth was the procurement so poor that they allowed that to happen?
I won't name any names, but I've got some mates that work in the private sector that procure into the NHS for certain bits of equipment needed. And it's such a gravy train. It's unbelievable how much money they rake in. You know, maybe that's part of economics about how things go around and how people earn a decent wage, but the amount of money that private company spends on just like renewing their car fleet every year just for the hell of it, just because they need another 1,000 BMW 3 Series just because the last set are a year old. It's crackers.
But the other thing in that is the way the capitalist system is built is they get a tax break on that, so there's a financial incentive to do that. Stuff as well.
Blimey.
You know, which is, it's like it's a bite either end.
Yeah.
You know? And in the middle of that sandwich is the whole of humanity that is gradually choking to death on all the rubbish that we've created. You
know? I know. Oh, man, it's going to be a fun 10 years or so, Sean.
It's an interesting time, certainly.
Yeah, and at the other end of the spectrum, I mean, we've got kids. I've got two little boys, and I'm trying to teach them about being responsible and, you know, giving them little things that they can be responsible with and, you know, being a bit more independent as well. So our kids, I don't want to make any sweeping generalizations here, but our kids less responsible for stuff now because they're a bit kind of mollycoddled and a bit... I mean, I'm only talking from personal experience. You know, there's things I would like my children to be able to do, my lads. In terms of, you know, being able to go to the local shop that's, you know, a couple hundred metres away on their own as like a 5 and an 8-year-old just to go and buy a pint of milk quickly when we're out. But we don't let them because what if something happens, you know? But I'd love to let them go out and do that.
Battle on, kids used to play outside. You know, that was what it was. When I was brought up on the council estate, all the kids in the summer would be out playing in the streets. Now kids are at home doing this and watching things on a screen, and we can't let them go outside because it's all murderers and paedophiles out there. Well, there wasn't when I was a kid. You know, there would be the occasional case where someone, oh, but it's different now. And people come up with a million reasons why it's different now. But children learn through observation, they learn through experience. So if they see their parents being anxious about them, guess what? They're anxious. It's like if their parents only get ding meals from the shop and do ding meals in the microwave, ding, then they never learn to cook. They never learn to, you know, and the amount of, again, plastics and rubbish that comes with the packaging. Whereas being, and actually, it doesn't take that much longer, you know, to actually make a meal from scratch if you know what you're doing, than it does to get a meal and stick it in the microwave. Yeah. But it's easier.
Well, I know exactly. It's easier to use a biro, isn't it, than to have a pencil with a sharpener that, you know, might break every now and again and doesn't write quite as well or as defined as a biro. But yeah, flipping heck, what was it? I've lost my train of thought there completely. It's gone. I know, yeah, the more I think about the environmental stuff is, I think ultimately we're going to need to learn how to cook and grow food ourselves.
Yeah. Fountain pen made of metal.
There we go. Surely the screw bit there next to the tip is plastic.
It is. I cannot deny that. There's a bit in there that's plastic, but it's not a single-use plastic. That can last for years and years and years.
Yeah, I'll give you that. So,
and that's the thing. If you're going to use plastic, make it something that's going to last. Yeah. You know? And it writes perfectly well. And the ink comes in a glass bottle.
Take responsibility for your writing tool.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, you know, yeah, I'm trying to teach my kids to be independent. And I went paddleboarding today, a bit off topic, but I'm up in Northumberland.
Got a
paddleboard, so everyone seems to be paddleboarding at the moment, so we thought we'd give it a go.
It's fun. Cool.
Loads it's of fun. Fun. So just me and Will went out on the river, and really good and tranquil, but for some reason he fell in, and the tide was high, so it was really deep. And he had a wetsuit on, but he didn't have a flotation device. He can swim pretty well. But yeah, I thought, that split second, I thought, I'm going to let him take responsibility for this, and I'm not going to jump in after him.
And then you jumped in.
No, I didn't know. Sure enough, he floated to the surface, and located the paddleboard, and I stuck out the oar and dragged it up and pulled himself back aboard. But yeah. My initial instinct was flip a neck, jump in and save him. I thought, I'll just give him a couple of seconds just to see how he does.
And so he learns it is okay to fall in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if you go paddleboarding in Doha, the water's so warm that when you fall in, it's like falling in the bath. It's crazy. Well,
this is the North Sea combined with a little local a local river, so it's a bit different here. But he didn't do it again, put it that way. all right, we'll summarize then. So, but what are the ultimate pluses of intention in our lives and taking responsibility for things?
I think that if we can be responsible, then we can look after each other and we can look after the planet, you know, as best we can. And it comes back to that thing about if we all look after each other, we'll all be okay. You know, it's all that kind of stuff. But that means being responsible, doesn't it? Looking after each other means I have to actually be responsible and think, you know, do you need anything? Can I help you? As opposed to, do I need anything? What can I get from you?
Yeah.
You know? And it's like we make our living by what we can get, but we live our lives by what can we give. That's how you make your life. Do you know what I mean? It's a different thing. And it's hard for people to get around it. But one of the things about mindfulness is that you take responsibility for who you are. You know, you observe, you learn, and you grow.
Yeah.
You know, we don't blame everybody else. And in that sense, it's never what happens to us. It's how we respond that's important. And we can make it out to be anybody else's fault, or we can deal with it ourselves. You know?
Yeah. It's okay. Yeah. So how... That guy that struck me with his van, then how do we teach people like that make that instinctive decision to run? How do we start to change that so that they next time they will pull over and check everyone's all right and pass their numbers on and all that kind of stuff.
I think that we have to do it through awareness and through learning, but most of these things are going to take a generation because people are learning from what they observe. And one of the biggest problems is when you've got people like Dear Dominic who can go to Barnard Castle and go completely against the rules and get away with it, why should anybody apply the rules? Why should anybody do the right thing if you can get away with doing the wrong thing? And that's demonstrated to you. That's the biggest problem. Yeah? It's not good.
Mm. Yeah, a lot of work to do here, isn't it, man? It's a big old ship to turn around.
Yeah.
But we might as well give it a go, eh? What's your resource?
Well, my resource is that there's a book called The Ramayana in the Ayurvedic world. And there's one chapter in it, which is the Bhagavad Gita. And it's known as the Gita. Now, there are lots of translations of the Gita. They go from, you know, quite poncy ones. This is called a Westerner's Walk through the Bhagavad Gita. So it's good for people like you and I to read. But it explains a lot about the whole idea of karma, which is people are saying karma is like, oh, negative karma. Karma just means the consequence of what you do. So it could be good, could be bad, whatever. It's just a consequence of action.
Yeah.
And the word dharma means to act in the appropriate way. So if you act in the right way, so you act dharmically, you minimize any negative karma.
Right.
Okay? Any negative consequence of what you do. And that book explains it in a really profound way. So when I was traveling, everybody had a copy of the Gita in their back pocket. And at night times when we were all, you know, we'd gather in an inn or an ashram, wherever we were staying, and then we'd all be kind of discussing the different points from the Gita. You know, but it's a really, really powerful thing to read. It's a good read.
You've used that as a resource quite a few times over the years, and I need to
I'll lend you a copy.
Lend me a copy. All right, mine's quite a long form article on mindtools.com about helping people take responsibility and yourself as well. So loads to get through there. Really, really good resource. So have a look at that. Sean, stay on the line because me and you have got to figure out when we're going to record another one. But everyone else,
we'll do that.
Have a good week and take care of yourselves. All right. See you later.
Yeah, and be responsible.
Yes, always. See you soon.
See ya.